Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo. Welcome to your preview of Chelsea versus Nottingham Forest. 2 o'clock kickoff on Sunday when Chelsea will host a side which beat them at Stamford Bridge last season and potentially stopped us from getting Champions League football, because that's how tight it was at the top of the table. However, it is, as usual, myself and Daniel Charles here to give you everything you need to know about that game. And obviously, a look back at the previous Premier League fixture and the match against Ghent. But Dan, should we jump straight into it? Should we talk Ghent, or do you want to talk Premier League first?
The Brighton one is a bit more impressive, isn't it? I think there's more to talk about from the Brighton game than there is the Ghent game. Because I think the Ghent game kind of went as expected, to be honest.
I agree. But then Kieran Drewsby Hall, you know what I mean? Like, it's a situation that he pulled out some granary level performances, maybe a bit of sourdough, not very white bread, you know. I think there's a player there. And obviously, did you see his post-match interview as
well?
Was
he taking aim at all his haters?
No, he was on the wind-up. It was really funny. I enjoyed it. I'll send you a link later. But yeah, let's I mean, look, as you said, Ghent expected, job done. Let's talk Brighton. I mean, big result for Chelsea. Brighton seemed to really enjoy playing with a high line for no reason whatsoever. And Chelsea really exposed that, didn't they?
Yeah, it was obviously, it started a little bit concerning, and I was a little bit fearful that they were getting in behind us a little bit too easy. But it kind of felt like once Chelsea just realised that Brighton were playing this comical high line, basically at their halfway line, they didn't have the speed in defence to really protect themselves against our speed and attack. I loved how we went for the throat, we went for the juggler. There was no kind of messing about, there was no kind of, let's try and think about how we're going to counteract Brighton. Let's try and expose them. And we just, it was brutal. Like, we went for them over and over again. And I think obviously some tight offside calls actually kept the score down. And really, in retrospect, it becomes the Cole Palmer game. But obviously Sancho had one that was ruled out. Palmer had another that was close as well. So all round, I think obviously that first half was really exciting. The bridge was bouncing, and obviously you can't talk about this game. I mean, there's already a t-shirt out at the club shop about Cole Palmer, specifically about this game. You know, it was one of the best individual performances I've ever seen live, and it just kind of summed up it in a lot of ways. I think it kind of summed up Cole Palmer at Chelsea, his whole Chelsea career, of like this very chaotic game where so much chaos is swirling around him, but he rises above all of it. I think it was quite symbolic and kind of a reflection on kind of how Cole Palmer has thrived in his Chelsea career, and obviously doing it with such a chilled vibe to him, just doing these incredible things. It doesn't seem to faze him. It, you know, even when he's doing outstanding things on the pitch, you don't get the feeling that he's kind of, you know, getting excited about it himself. So he was even getting angry at himself in the second half because he missed a chance to score a fifth.
Yeah, he's a very simple man of simple pleasures. I love the way when he was talking about the free kick. They're like, "Do you practice those?" He went, "No, not really. I just kind of hit it." I was like, "What?" Like, it was very Rain Man. I love it. It was the way that he just like, yeah, here's what it is. He's just one of the funniest interviews as well, just because he just don't know what he's going to say, and I don't think he knows what he's going to say half the time either. But he makes up for it, his lack of camera work, or his lack of ability with camera work, should I say, by being an absolutely spectacular footballer. And I'm going to pose the question now, Dan, right? Because I got posed it in a space after the game and I was really struggling. Is there a player that's playing better than Cole Palmer in the world right now?
So this is a conversation I've had as well, in similar ways of like, oh, is he the, because then that leads you to like, well, is he the best player in the world currently in form, right? That's effectively what you're saying in some ways. And I guess the instinct of a lot of us would be like, well, now that sounds a bit ridiculous. I think the thing that gives Palmer the edge is his importance to his team, which may seem like a bit of a shady thing to say. Like, I'm trying to make out that, you know, Erling Haaland isn't important for his team, Vinicius Junior isn't important to his team. Obviously that's silly. But in terms of the level of importance and influence that Cole Palmer has at Chelsea in percentage to Man City and Real Madrid for Haaland and say Vinicius or whoever else you want to say, I know this is audio, but I'm making a sign with my hand that basically my left hand is quite high up here and the others are quite low down. Because I think the overall, we know at Man City, even without Erling Haaland, they were winning Premier League titles before he arrived. Like, they were still the best team in the country. And I think even without Erling Haaland, they still go close to winning the Premier League title, as insanely, freakishly clinical as Erling Haaland is. So that's why I think with Palmer, it's just, it's also the age. Whether, again, is this a cheap thing to kind of, whether it's relevant to the discussion or not. I think his age and his lack of Premier League minutes before arriving at Chelsea is also just whether it's a point or whether it's just a bit of context is quite remarkable too.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing which catches everyone off guard. I mean, you speak to some people. I think Gary, someone I spoke to about Carl Palmer at the end of last season, and when we signed him, he was over the moon. Like, he was saying this could be one of the big things. You know, he was really excited to see him play. Me, on the other hand, I didn't know enough about him. I hadn't seen enough of him. And I thought, 40 million quid for someone who's had very few minutes. Interesting. And lo and behold, I was proven very, very, very wrong. And he was astounding. And he's continued that form. And he for me, look, I don't think there's anyone better in the world than him right now, apart from maybe Harry Kane and what he does to that Bayern team. In terms of the output, I think Harry Kane's the only player ahead of him right now. And even then, you take the Bundesliga with a pinch of salt. I don't think the quality of the league is anywhere near the quality of the Premier League. And you look at that, and then that kind of answers the question for me. I think in terms of form right now, nobody is better than Cole Palmer. And obviously, there's all the talk of, oh, will Chelsea keep hold of him? You know, what do they need to do to keep him? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, Chelsea needs to do stuff to keep hold of the player, no doubt about it. But the length of contract he's on, you're looking at hundreds of millions to sign a player like Cole Palmer right now. And I'm not talking, you know, I'm probably talking, because of the length of the contract, Neymar money. You think about when he moved from Barcelona to PSG. That's the sort of price we're looking at, I reckon, for Cole Palmer right now. And that's purely down to the fact that he's on such a long contract, but he's also performing so well. And, you know, he's had his rest in the Conference League game, and he's going to hopefully come back all guns blazing against Nottingham Forest. But I want to touch on a couple of other things as well. Obviously, I've mentioned, obviously, in this case, and it kind of, look, like I said, Ghent, we don't really need to talk about. I think there were some good performances in there, but not really anything that was groundbreaking, apart from maybe Renato Vega, but we can talk about him potentially later on in the show. I think Enzo Maresca might have finally put his foot down. I think we're finally going to see the best out of a coach as well. And I'm a big fan of the football he's playing. I think Brighton was a great example, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that it was a bit of a statement game as well, because in a sense of the style Chelsea have been playing. We've kind of touched on this, right? That the style of football Chelsea have played under Maresca so far is not really as advertised. But I don't think that's a negative. I think that's a positive, actually, because I think it's buying Maresca a lot more credit quickly. It feels a lot more in keeping. I think Joe Tweed's put it best. Is like, it feels a lot more Chelsea. And yeah, I've always felt that Chelsea, we don't have a style of play. Like, we're not one of these clubs that, you know, you sort of hark back and go, oh, there's the Chelsea way. You know, we've never kind of had that, right? And I think the great thing about Chelsea is we are a little bit chameleon, in the sense that for different eras of the club, we've, you know, the best Chelsea teams, I think, the best Chelsea team of all time, in my opinion, the 0405 team, could outscore you, could outfight you, could do a scrappy 1-0 win, could counter against you, could keep hold of the ball, could suffocate you. Could, you know, that to me is what makes a great football team. The best football teams are able to be versatile, be flexible, and beat you in different ways. If you want to play a scrappy game, we'll beat you. If you want to play a more flary game, we'll beat you there as well. And I think, I don't know, I don't know if it's Maresca. It's hard to say. It's still a very small sample size. I don't know if he's adapted to the circumstances, as in he's got a higher level of player than he had last year. I don't know if it's him adapting to his environment of understanding that he needs results this season. The club needs results. And whether he's looked at you know, we know he studies a lot about the game, and, you know, whether he's looked at what Sarri struggled with at Chelsea to get buy-in, even sometimes under Tuchel when we played kind of a slow possession-based game, and obviously Potter too. I need to find something to energize this crowd behind me. So I don't know. That's just that. This is all theory at this point. But what it there's undeniable. I made a whole show on my podcast about it this week. Like, it's going well for him. There's no way of trying to warp reality. You know, that's something that I know me and you are very keen on. And that was the case during the summer when a lot of people wanted us to kind of not be critical of the club. You know, when things are going well, you know, obviously it's brilliant. And I think that for Maresca's sake, it's nice that he has been flexible. Because for just based on what I've seen, and again, this may not be reflected by his strategy, but to me, we are playing a very different brand of football than we were in pre-season. The strategy in pre-season to me was a lot more what he probably was kind of sold at Maresca as kind of this like slow possession. We're going to build up from deep. We're going to play players in maybe roles that aren't that suitable to them. And at times it looked comically bad, which at times pre-season is. But as it's moved into the season, I think he has adapted to the tools at his disposal, which I think is, you know, really impressive and I think encouraging. And we hope it continues, right? It's not that this team can't pass the ball around, can't keep possession. And, I'm not slavishly like, if the team is ever like passing out from the back, I'm going to get angry about it. Like, no, like it's game state, right? And the way also, if you watch that Brighton game, the way we adapted in both halves, in the first half, we were a lot more gung-ho and that there was some cause of concern there defensively. In the second half, we adapted, we sat deeper, we let Brighton have a lot of the ball. A lot of teams are having more of the ball than Chelsea so far this season. That is another thing. But it never felt like Brighton were the dominant team in that game.
No, I think that's the best way to put it. I like as well when you talk about how Chelsea be a chameleon as well. I look at the way we counter. I was saying this yesterday watching the game against Ghent. I think that when Chelsea hit on the counter in the past few years, you'd have one player go all the way up the pitch on their own and then turn around to make the pass and no one would be there. Now Chelsea hit on the counter, you got four or five players and multiple options that cause issues for teams. And it feels almost very similar to how Conte played when we were on the counter. I thought when you looked at that team play football, there was a swarm which just hit you in the season that Chelsea won the league. And look, I'm not saying Chelsea's going to win the league by any stretch of the imagination. We're anywhere near that yet. But you see these players hit on the counter and teams don't know what to do. It's very much a case of you've got usually Chelsea outnumbering the defensive team because they've held, as you said, held onto the ball. Chelsea have sat deeper and then all of a sudden, ball's won in midfield by Moises Caicedo or one at the back by Levi Colwill, just as examples. And straight away, that really direct pass is made. But not only that, it's a case of Chelsea actually move the ball in different directions to make that direct pass. There's lots of triangles going on and it's really simple football, which is almost the best thing. Just Maresca, right? He's doing it like Italian cooking, all right? You just kind of throw it in, see what happens. Really simple flavours, really tasty, but there's lots of different ways of doing it. And I'm a big fan of that. So,
but the Conte reference is an interesting one as well. I mean, I had big problems with Conte in the second Chelsea season. But that period when we won 13 games in a row is some of the best football I've ever seen from Chelsea. Like the Everton 5-0, the Man United 4-0. Some of the football we played in that run, like when people talk about Conte, they talk about counter-attacking football, and that kind of leads you to think that it's like really defensive and you know really regressive and not that fun to kind of watch. But no, I mean that team at its best was as entertaining as the Ancelotti Chelsea at times, at points. I think the Ancelotti Chelsea, if you're talking about aesthetic, like what's the most entertaining Chelsea team, I think the 09-10 Chelsea team is still going to be, I think, come to the forefront for a lot of people for obvious reasons. But in terms of what he was able to produce in a short period of time, that was really impressive. I'm just intrigued. You know, obviously we're only in October, and I guess given your kind of natural tendency to look at a glass half empty rather than half full.
Don't know what you're talking about, mate. What? No. What?
well, there's chatter about like what is Chelsea's ceiling this season? And to me, I'm kind of like putting the brakes on, basically, because I was on that Chelsea pod and we were talking about the upcoming fixtures post the international break, right? That I feel that will be very defining just for the ceiling. And I'm not saying that as like a Maresca has to win this game, that game. You know, if we go to Anfield and lose, that's the end of the world. Obviously not. Like, it's just, it would be curious to see if Chelsea are still like 2 points off the top post that run where I think it ends with Arsenal at home. That would be some statement, wouldn't it? I'm not, again, that doesn't mean Chelsea are going to compete for the Premier League title or win the Premier League title. I'm just saying, I think that would be a significant change, I think, in the feeling around this team. Because there still is, like, we got to remember, it's all happened quite quickly where the positive mood has come up. Like, there still is, there still are periods in games, even the Ghent game, where you're like, it does kind of feel at times like we're on a little bit of a knife edge, which is why I'm still kind of thinking, I don't think we will have enough to be anything more than like fourth. But long may it continue. At least we get to theorise that there might be a higher ceiling this season.
That's all I'm looking at, to be honest. I just want to look at it in theory, and I want to just keep looking. And then if it comes to fruition, like that game against Arsenal, if Chelsea go and win that game, I might sit there and be a bit like, okay, that's like you said, it's a big statement. There's obviously talk of certain signings, and I think the best description, I know I've described the football as almost semi-Conte-esque in that first season, I think the best description to potentially talk about where Chelsea are right now, I'd say a decent mirroring could be when Liverpool hadn't signed Van Dijk. It was like that year, 6 months before they'd signed Van Dijk, where defensively you could see they were still very frail, but they could attack and they could really go for people. And Chelsea are being linked with some good centre-half options, and I think that's something that they're looking to bring in next to Levi Colwill. It'd be a big statement signing as well. That's what I'd like it to be. And I think in January there's going to be some options. They've got to look at it and they've got to try and find the best one. And
I actually don't think the centre back here. Well, I guess you could argue, yeah, the comparison actually moves on, because you could go, it was not only centre back where they had a problem, it was goalkeeper as well. And to me, I think that is still the biggest problem that Maresca has got. I don't want to, you know, we want to keep the good vibes right now, but I just think you can't legislate, or you can't. I know Maresca post Brighton was like, we're going to concede 10 more goals like that. The second one I'm talking about, where Sanchez passes it to Belieber in his own box. I don't buy that Maresca is going to accept that happening 10 more times this season. It's easy to accept it when you've just won 4-2. If that happens in the 80th minute against Arsenal and it's 0-0, I don't think, or it happens in a different type of environment where Chelsea are maybe on a more difficult run and the goals aren't flowing, they you know, the attack isn't clicking. I think I'll give Maresca credit that he's doing just a bit of squad management there rather than his actual belief. I don't believe he feels that he can, in the long term, continue with a goalkeeper like that. But then I guess, you know, part of the summer was him choosing Sanchez over Petrovic. So I like to think that he doesn't feel that's his first choice for the long term, because I don't think Robert Sanchez can be Chelsea's first choice for the long term. Because I think every now and then, probably every 5 to 6 games, he's going to do something like that. And if you want to be a top team, you can't have your goalkeeper doing that every 5 to 6 games.
No, but I think then the problem goes into who's out there that could be the answer to that. And I don't think Jordi Petrovic is that answer either. He was better than Robert Sanchez last season, but he didn't set the world alight, did he? But I guess sometimes that's what we needed at that point in time. We just needed a goalkeeper that could do a good job. And that's what Petrovic did. And I think, look, Robert Sanchez, despite those mistakes, has made some very good saves, has been solid in some cases. And I think that was his first mistake in a long time, because he had a very good run. I think Bournemouth was a great example as well in terms of what he showed, what he was capable of, and making those big saves in games. He's done that a lot this season. So, you know, I think, look, centre-back, goalkeeper, they're definitely two big areas that Chelsea need to address. I think the person which a lot of people have looked at as just signed for Liverpool and has gone back on loan at Valencia. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens there. But look, Alisson's running his contract down. Who knows? Chelsea might do something very, very smart there. But we'll have to see what happens. But anyway, we should probably stop talking about the games gone by and look forward. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to slide it straight in. It's the best show on Chelsea podcast for a reason. That's because it's got the best jingle. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
That time of the week again, it's Stat Shaggers, and this week it's against Nottingham Forest as Chelsea played their last Premier League game for a two-week break due to another international break for no apparent reason. Chelsea against Forest, overall we played 98 matches against Forest, winning 41 of them, drawing 30 and losing 27, so a good record. But it's not an amazing record, a lot of those games of course coming a long time ago now. If we look at the last 10 games, we have won 7 of them, drawn 2 and lost 1, and it's that one loss I would like to go into a little bit more. That did come last season against Forest at Stamford Bridge in September of 2023, when Anthony Elanga's goal saw Forest to their first win at Stamford Bridge since 1995, when Stan Collymore scored a brace. On to the managers themselves. As always, Mr. Maresca, Enzo, our new manager that we all love, has never played against Forest, so looks for his first as he looks to win his 6th match in a row as Chelsea boss after some excellent wins against West Ham, Bournemouth, Brighton and of course Barrow and Ghent in the League Cup and Conference League respectively. Mr. Nuno Espirito Santo, Nottingham Forest's manager, on the other hand, has now faced Chelsea as a manager 8 times, winning 2, drawing 2 and losing 4. As Forest manager though, he's only managed once against Chelsea, losing 3-2 in May last year, thanks to late goals for Chelsea from Raheem Sterling and Nicholas Jackson in the penultimate game of the season. That's the stats. It's back to you in the studio.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Right, Dan. Thoughts?
Numbers.
Sweet. Right, we'll move swiftly on. Let's talk about it then. Let's look forward to this game against Nottingham Forest. Forest playing very, very well at the minute, of course. Nuno Espirito Santo getting them all going the right way. And I'm seeing shades of that Wolves side, which he had potentially. And obviously there is a return for Callum Hudson-Odoi to Stamford Bridge, who will probably be playing and obviously scored the winner at Anfield. So, Dan, are you worried about this one, or do you feel like this is a game which should be very open and shut?
You have to factor in that, you know, Forest have obviously had a strong start to the year. I guess comparative to their expectations, they've only lost one game, which literally happened last weekend. And they will probably, and I guess from their fans, but I assume Nuno Espirito Santo and their players will walk into this game with the mindset that, well, we went to Anfield and won a couple of weeks ago and put in a really resolute defensive display. We had good counter-attacking ability. We went to Brighton and got a draw in the end, despite some difficulty. So I think Forest pose a different type of challenge. You know, I think they absolutely will not be playing on the halfway line. I know that for certain. And Santa, I don't think many teams will come to the Bridge and play like that again, to be honest. So I think it will be a case of Chelsea trying to, maybe it'll be a little bit more similar to the Palace game in that sense, in the sense of, you know, Chelsea having a lot more of the ball than they have in recent weeks, and then whether you are able to then lure the opponent out to then maybe get those transition opportunities. I think that's always a difficulty, right, is that the space becomes congested and then, you know, you're really relying on individual players who are going to operate in tight areas. I think the positive is we've got players who can do that well. You know, I think Nkunku thrives in that. I think Jackson does a lot better than people give him credit for. I think Sancho actually really thrives. Seeing him live for Chelsea for the first time last week, I was just so impressed with the way the ball sticks to him. And it feels like he comes alive when he has more players around him. I don't want to give the name comparison because it puts too much pressure on Sancho, but, you know, it did remind me of another player who used to play on the left flank at Chelsea. And that could be anyone, you know, really.
Ricardo Quaresma.
Yeah, Quaresma. you know, I feel that overall...
Yuri Zhirkov, sorry. No, sorry, I was getting something out.
In some ways, I think it's a bit of a litmus test, right? Because it was one of those games last year where we had a lot of the ball, but then they hit us with a sucker punch on the break and we couldn't find a response. And I think it's one of those games where any Chelsea head coach in recent years has at times come unstuck and they've been really detrimental to our Premier League season. So the confidence to form, the flow of the team looks good. There seems to be good competition, as was proven in the Ghent game, right? Like, despite some defensive fragility, it seems like the B team are performing, especially in attack, to keep challenging and wanting to push to get into the first team. So I am slightly concerned, though, because I think Hudson-Odoi, I mean, I think it's an absolute crime that he was sold for £5 million. Was it even 5 million? I mean, that has to be one of the steals. Free, but I mean, it's just, I just don't get it. I just really don't. And it still frustrates me. And it looked to me like when we played them in May, he went out there with a death wish, basically. Like, he was like, I am dragging this team to a win if I can. And he nearly did. Obviously, Reece James came off the bench and responded. But I think it'll be close. I don't think it'll be a comfortable win. But I think the confidence in the team at the moment at least gives me belief that they can A, respond to adversity within games. We saw that last weekend. And B, just create enough within the game to overcome, I guess, defensive fragility.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing as well. Like we said, it's just a chameleon. I'm going to use, I know it's probably a made up word, but we're going to use it because I think it's the best way to describe Chelsea. Chameleonic. The chameleonic nature of what this side can do is what I think makes me less worried about this game than I would have been in the past. Purely because, like you said, I think we will be able to lure the side out. I think we will be going into those tight spaces. I think Jadon Sancho is a great example of a player there who has thrived in those tight spaces. He does drive me insane sometimes, where, you know, he will just try and stick the ball between someone's legs when he doesn't need to. And that drives me up the wall. And obviously, you know, João Félix did that as well against Ghent when I was a bit like, come on, mate, can you just, let's just keep it simple. Let's do what we need to do. We can entertain once we're 4-0 up. But look, I think that even though they are playing well, I do think that we've got all the tools in our arsenal to really prove a point. And I think one of those tools as well, which shouldn't be understated, is the fact that they beat Liverpool. I think it's the fact that we aren't going to be looking at this as, oh, it's just Nottingham Forest. They're going to, no, it's Nottingham Forest. We appreciate this is a game we should win, but Liverpool didn't. So we now need to go and prove what we can do. And that only feeds more into the positive narrative, by the way, Dan, because I'm comparing us to Liverpool. So, you know, swings and roundabouts, mate. Every cloud, as they say. But look, I'm very excited for it. And you've mentioned some players, obviously, and you mentioned the second team. And I want to talk a little bit about Renato Vega. Should we, that was a very, very, very good signing, I think.
No, it was one at the time I was, I thought could prove to be really impactful and just really useful. It didn't cost that much. Versatile, good height about him, and he already seems to have cult hero vibes about him. Yeah. Pretty much from the first time I saw him against Milan, he loves a tackle. That man, I don't think he eats food. The way he gets protein is through making a tackle, because he absolutely loves it. And I think that's obviously connected with the Stamford Bridge crowd very quickly. And I thought we saw kind of the full repertoire in a sense of Vega against Ghent. Again, you add the context of the opposition, but we saw what he can do. Like, in the summer, I think Matt Law was the first one to report about this, that Maresca wanted what he referred to as Swiss Army knife players. You know, players who, across the course of a long season, could do a variety of things for him. And I think Vega is probably the biggest example of that, in the sense that he is someone in that game against Ghent. He starts off as kind of a wing back. He's able to make really advanced runs into the box, get himself in front of goal, score a goal, rotate well with Mikhailo Mudryk, but then move into central midfield when you need a bit of cover, move into left centre back when you need a bit of cover. I think he's got good physicality about him, so it seems like he's able to adapt to the English game very quickly. And even off the bench against Brighton, he had quite an impact. I think he won the most tackles of a Chelsea player against Brighton in the entirety of the game. I'm pretty sure I read that stat, which is incredible given he only had about 20, 25 minutes in the end. So, yeah, I think he looks like a bargain. I mean, he really does. Whether he is ever going to become a starter for Chelsea, I'm not sure. But then I think it's one of the things that we maybe touched upon, and I've definitely talked about with others, about one of my concerns about kind of the lopsided nature of our recruitment, right? That you do need Aspilicueta's, you do need Jonobi Mikel's, you do need Gary Cahill's in your squad. You do need players who are just going to be your consistent 7 out of 10s every single week, where you know he can play here, he can play there, but I know I'm very likely to get a durable player here. It's why I think Malo Gusto proved to be such one of the favourite signings from last year, because he looked like that player. And yeah, I think Vega already is getting himself to be a fan favourite, and I think he will get a ton of minutes in the Conference League.
I think he can be one of those signings. I really do. I think the way he's played, like I said, he's been a flying wing back. He's tucked into midfield. He's played on the left side of the back three. You know, he's someone who I think can really, really showcase ability, and he's so young as well. I think, you know, bear in mind, if we're talking about Aspilicueta again, I love to use history as examples. We signed Aspilicueta as a youngster to slowly bed himself into the team, and lo and behold, we then got a player who came into the side and was such a key figure. Whether or not Renato Vega becomes that remains to be seen. But I was thoroughly impressed with him, and he's someone who I think, as you said, bit of a cult hero status. And I'd be very excited to see what else he can do in a Chelsea shirt. But having said all of that, look, as much as we love him, I think we should move into the Chelsea Echo predicted 11. And I don't think he gets in there, unfortunately, ahead of Marco Correa. Or does he, Dan? Let me know.
I don't think he will. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Vega get himself a start here. I just think Correa is still doing enough to get himself a regular starting place in the Premier League. I think that the way he moves into central midfield, I think he's quite slick. And it's what I said literally a week ago, right? That you can't really have a go at a coach for sticking with a winning team. You know, there are some concerns, absolutely, defensively. And of course, you'd factor Correa into it. I don't think any of the defence against Brighton came out of it looking amazing, to be honest, because we obviously conceded 2 goals. They got better in the second half. But yeah, I think Cucurella remains at the moment.
Okay. So if we're going to do the team, Robert Sanchez in goal, I'm guessing, even though maybe Jorgensen could get a run out. I mean, what did you think of Jorgensen against Ghent? Do you think he did enough to maybe argue for a place in the team ahead of Sanchez? Or do you think it's very much a case of pick one, same issue, different day?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I think the problem is with Jorgensen, there just isn't enough evidence at the moment to make a fair judgment on him. So I can't really say. When does that change? I mean, if you remember Petrovic, it took a while for Petrovic to finally get a chance under Pochettino. And then when he did, a lot of people were sort of saying he's going to take the place of Sanchez. And of course, he did for the majority of the season. So maybe it will be the case with Jorgensen again, where he, by Christmas, is our first choice. But I can't honestly say I looked at the Ghent game where we did concede 2 goals. Although I would say I don't blame the keeper for either of the goals. Unlike the Brighton game, where I think both of the goals came directly from goalkeeping errors, or the goalkeeper had a direct hand in conceding those goals. So it probably for him, like with a lot of players, I don't think it was enough to kind of really change the mind of Maresca. I think the Sanchez one is going to be a longer term discussion. I really do, as we head towards January, because then even in January, I wonder if goalkeeper might become an area where the club are looking at that again.
Okay, well, I think that's definitely an argument to be made. I think that January is going to be the time when Chelsea review that situation. I think goalkeeper and centre-back probably will be both addressed in January. But centre-back, I think there's less of an issue in terms of figuring out if we're going to find a player who can slot in. I think there's far more out there in terms of good. Elite is a strong word. I don't know how many elite ones are out there, but good heading towards elite, I think there's a fair amount out there. And goalkeeper, though, I don't think there are many. I know a lot of people just, you know, wax lyrical on the obvious names like Mike Maignan, but outside of that, I couldn't give you names. I don't know if there's anyone out there I look at and I get excited by. With that being said, it'll be Robert Sanchez in goal, Cucurella left back, centre halves Levi Colwill, well, Wesley Fofana, I think it's fairly self-explanatory. Right back, I'm guessing, well, Dan, I think here's a question. Reece James could potentially be available. Do you put Reece James in the 11, or do you continue to wrap him in cotton wool until there's 100% certainty that he's fit?
No, I don't think he'll start this game. You know, you got to factor in that Mal Augusto got a complete rest against Ghent. So he, I think he starts again. The James one, I was in a conversation with someone about this, that you almost completely forget Reece James now.
Yeah.
Which is a real sad thing to admit, but again, let's talk about reality. This is a guy who has played literally no competitive football so far this season. So yeah, I don't know what to say about Reece anymore. I don't know how you manage him, because do you play him, and then even his disciplinary record hasn't been great when you've played him, but then also the injury issues, and he's even getting injured outside of most of his injuries, I think nearly all of them seem to come actually outside of competitive football. So yeah, I don't know if you've got a better suggestion, or anyone else listening has a better suggestion for what to do with Reece at this point, because it kind of doesn't factor into my thinking, which again is a heartbreaking thing to admit, because he's such an extraordinary talent when he is playing. But I have sympathy for the club and sympathy for Maresca to try and judge that, because you want to play him, but then if you play him and he instantly gets injured again, you're going to be one getting blamed. But then I turn around at this point and go, what are you supposed to do if the guy keeps on getting injured? Never play him again. You know.
Well, I think I'm out of the answer. I mean, if he got injured again when he gets fully fit, if a bid came in, I'm not going to lie, at the minute I'd be thinking about it. Purely because I don't know where his future lies at Chelsea right now. Which is insane to say about a club captain, insane to say about a player with just such pedigree. But if he can't stay fit, he can't stay fit. So with that being said, it's Mal Augusto in at right back for the Chelsea Echo 11. The midfield three, I think, again, fairly self-explanatory. Cole Palmer definitely starts in the 10. Or do we just like not play him because it'd be unfair? You know, I don't want to be, you know, too mean. No, I'm joking. Not in the forest can have it. He's going to go in straight at number 10. Moises Caicedo. Romeo Lavia potentially could be available this down. Would you start him, or do you just go with Enzo Fernandez, try and play those balls to break down that Nottingham Forest team?
Again, I think Lavia, they're probably going to be a bit more cautious with him. What was it? 15? Did he get 15 or 20 minutes against Brighton? He didn't get a lot of time. He was one of the last subs, if I remember rightly. So it's probably about easing him back in, right? And that's probably the smart play. And Enzo, again, you know, I thought Enzo was obviously important, because against the high line, he's going to play those passes over the top that can be really impactful for Chelsea. Still do, I'll keep on saying this, and you know, maybe people think it's unfair. I still do have concerns about him off the ball. And actually, in a game like this, you probably could see it more because of the transition opportunities that Forest will be looking for and to try and hunt down Chelsea. However, I think that, again, whether you look at it as a midfield trio in possession of Cucurella, Caicedo and Enzo, I think you just continue with what works. Obviously, post the international break is going to be very fascinating, because with that tough run of games, if Enzo Fernandez maybe doesn't have the best, most encouraging performance on Sunday, are you then starting to think Lavia and Caicedo is the midfield duo I want to go to Anfield rather than Caicedo and Fernandez?
Well, I mean, I think for me, that would be the midfield duo I'd go with anyway. Just have that resolute nature in defensive midfield. I think that, you know, we need to have that. But that's not for today. That's obviously for the Liverpool game. But so we're going for that. That's our midfield. Front three. Now, this, I feel, could be interesting. And I'm talking specifically on the right-hand side. Now, we're talking about this B team pushing for players, and especially players in the front line. Does Pedro Neto come in for Noni Madueke?
Maybe. I think Noni is the one maybe out of that attack that arguably is maybe under threat, because the competition is high. I mean, what else was Neto supposed to do against Ghent? You know, this is something I discussed in my Ghent review, right? That at the moment, it's good because the team, the B team's winning, the A team's winning, everyone's happy. But that B team is going to start to think, well, how am I supposed to break into that A team at some point? And, you know, if you're looking at anyone who might be rotated, yeah, Neto will probably think to himself, I've got a good opportunity here. It's not because Madueke has had a bad performance per se. He just hasn't been producing like he did early on in the season. Like, his speed was still important against Brighton. It absolutely was. Like, I think Madueke's movement and threat that he poses, I still think is an important part to Chelsea's attack. But so you could argue is Pedro Neto. So maybe that's the one, the most obvious position in this team where I'd go, I maybe would see one of the B team coming in.
Make a decision. Pedro Neto or Nonny Madueke. This is the Chelsea Echo 11. It's not a maybe. I want to know. Who is it?
Let's go. Yeah, Neto to score against Nottingham Forest. Let's go with that. So the ex-Wolves player. The expected narrative is high on that one.
Nice. I like that. Pedro Neto on the right. I think Jadon Sancho, I've already said, is going to be starting on the left. And up front will be Nicholas Jackson, obviously, who didn't feature against Ghent. So that is the Chelsea Echo 11. That is your preview for Nottingham Forest. Me and Dan, very excited. We'll be at Stamford Bridge and we'll be giving you your voice note review straight after the game. But of course, whilst you're waiting for that, make sure you tune into Final Score with The Score, where the lads will be breaking down that big, big fixture for Chelsea. Another game for them to prove a point. But speaking of people proving points and people talking, we've got to listen to the bald man himself. Ladies and gentlemen, let's head across to the press conference and let's have a chat with Enzo Maresca.
Not any update. The only one is Reece James still out. The rest, they are all available.
Tom.
So when you welcomed Nottingham Forest to Stamford Bridge for the weekend, you welcomed the team through, went to Anfield a couple of weeks ago and soaked up the pressure and won. How wary of their threat do you have?
No, we need to be aware of that. We need to be careful of that in terms of, we know that every Premier League game, but today in football, I think every game, no matter the competition, can be a difficult game. And Nottingham, they have a good, very good manager, very good squad. They are doing well. Beating Liverpool is not easy, never, especially away. So they are doing very good. And we're going to try to prepare our best.
How important is it that you're buying down the defensive mistakes that caused a couple of Brighton goals on the weekend, but also here tonight?
We don't concede goal. But at the same time, we know that in football, you are going to concede goal. You have to decide in which way. I think the two goals that we conceded against Brighton, they were two. The first one, probably, yes, it's more a mistake. The second one, I think, was a mix of things. The action starts with Malo. And from there, we concede yellow card, and we concede a chance. Then from the goal kick, we concede the goal. So it's not a Robert mistake. I think it's a mix. And tonight, the first goal is set pieces, can happen. And the second one is the one that I really don't like. And the reason why is because we saw that the game was finished, so we switch off. But we need to improve, and we need to understand that until the final whistle, we need to be switched on.
When mistakes are made at the back at Leicester, at Birmingham City at home, I think half-time or full-time, you said to Mads, keep doing it this way or be substituted. Has a similar conversation been had with, say, Robert Sanchez or the defenders, that they've got to stick to it even if they make these mistakes?
That one probably was even more. We were winning 1-0, 45 minutes, goal kick for us, and we concede a goal. But it's important that second half we continue in the same way. And I think here it's, I said the other day, we are going to concede more goals building from behind. But if you see most of our chances in all the games we played since we start, even Wolves away, all the games, most of the time our action, our football start with keeper when they press higher. When they don't press higher, like tonight, how many times we play with Philip tonight? Just in goal kick, I don't think we play many times with Philip because we don't need that. And the other day again, we play against a team that they were defending defensive line very higher, so we were more direct in behind. We have a plan for every game. Sometimes it's working, sometimes no. But we are not playing every game the same. So we adapt a little bit.
Sometimes I can feel with Chelsea, there's a lot of chaos
around the club, but right now it actually feels very calm. I imagine you're liking that. What's the what's your secret?
I think always results help, and for so probably is the reason why in this moment is what it is. But for the first 2 months we had many noise around the club. I said many times that inside was very quiet, but hopefully we can continue with in the way we are now.
Della. Hi Enzo, if I may just follow on from what Kieran was saying, you're talking about results bring calm, but at the end of last season Chelsea had a terrific run of results, but it still felt like it was ready to explode at any moment. Is bringing a sense of calm something you've worked on, and is that your kind of hallmark? Are you kind of that sort of person that you will bring an air of calm to a club?
I said many times, I don't know last year because I was not here. The only thing I can say, and I said that since we start, that I like to be focused on the things that I can do something, I can control, and the only part that I can control is the football side. All the noises around the club, it's something that I cannot control. I don't know if they are real noise, no real noise. I don't care about, to be honest, because the focus for me has to be, I'm already thinking tomorrow session, how we can prepare the game and win. I'm not thinking about different things.
And have you not let the noise from outside affect you? With the greatest respect, Italian managers aren't renowned for their calm, quiet personalities. There's been a few here.
Maurizio Sarri was not like Carlo. They are a bit different in terms of calm.
I'm thinking, what's his name? Is it Napoli now?
Antonio.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, do you like the quiet life? Which do you prefer?
The way I am, that I'm not saying that is good way or no good way, but I think we are all different. I played as a teammate with Antonio 3 years with Juventus, and I know how calm is Antonio.
And the noise maybe will change a little bit, I think. Maybe it will become more about, you know, being near the top of the table. Can Chelsea win things? Do you think that will be good for the players and good for you, or do you have to sort of manage them as well?
I said already, I really don't think that we can compete with City and Arsenal. I really think that, because we are not ready, and the reason why is because I said many times, City is working with the same manager 9 years, Arsenal is working with the same manager 5 years, and it's something that if you want to compete for important thing, you need that time. You need. I think after Arsenal PSG, they asked the same to Luis Enrique, and Luis Enrique said, the difference between us and them is that Arsenal with same manager 5 years, and we are 1 year and a half. Imagine us 3 months. So it's a huge difference. So for me, I'm really convinced that we cannot compete with that club. The target is to improve and slowly to go close that club. But we are not in this moment ready for that.
Final question,
yeah,
Nick.
Just following on from that, how long do you think you can take to?
No, I said the other day, there is no time, because you can continue to improve and to continue to add solution and things, always. But at the end, more time you are together, and I think more time, better is, because you can know each other, they can improve. So it's just about this.
Quotes were said, stats were given, opinions were made. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Chelsea Echo. It's been myself, Louis Benaventi. It has been Daniel Childs here giving you everything you need to know. If you have enjoyed the pod, please make sure you give us a 5-star review on wherever you listen to this. And please, guys, when you see it on socials, give it a little nudge. Say, guys, look at this. Check it out. Have a little listen. No harm, no foul. And it really helps the pod. So if you have enjoyed this, take care of yourselves, guys. Dan, I will be seeing you on Sunday, and we will be seeing you straight after the game. Ta-da, guys.